Welcome back to the Word for Life radio broadcast. With me in the studio this morning, our two guest hosts. Dr. Olola is away on a ministry trip, but this morning we are blessed to have back in the studio with us Dr. Wynn Kimbrough, pastor of Grace Baptist Church in Kingsford, Michigan, and evangelist Kevin Brownfield. Men, we're thankful that you could be with us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
The last time we were talking together, we actually spent an entire broadcast talking about something that you're preaching through, the book of Philippians.
Yes.
I think you kind of led us along a little journey to try to discover how Christ is central in our suffering.
Yeah, we looked at chapter 1 and the fact that Christ is in the middle of that suffering, and we often struggle when we're in the middle of it and we think God is absent, but remembering what God said to Job, I'm not exactly sure the portion, but God said to Job that he hid himself. And when you stop and think about it, sometimes God may not be apparent, but mm-hmm. Christ is right in the middle, in the center of all the suffering that we mm-hmm. go through, because he has already endured the ultimate of suffering.
And so much of the New Testament really is about believers in the suffering and the struggle of faith. Am I going to believe God when I don't see God, or when I don't see God moving in the way I think God should mm-hmm. be doing something? And so earlier you mentioned Peter, but you read, and you've been preaching through, I think, 1 and 2 Peter, and those admonitions that are there and those realities mm-hmm. about believers that are persecuted and believers that are suffering, and then, as Kevin mentioned, the Apostle Paul, in the fact that whatever comfort that God gives to us, we are then not only a recipient, but we have a responsibility to do that exact same ministry of comforting another believer. See, that's a part of my ministry, you know, not just as a pastor, but together, part of what we're supposed to do in life is whatever God has done in me, there is someone else who needs me to be a part yeah. of sharing that with them.
You know, I was in a bookstore the other day. I saw the title of a book. I couldn't tell you who wrote it. I didn't even have time to pick it up and thumb through it. I was running late, but I saw the title, and it just jumped off the page at me. And it was a little book called So You Want to Be Like Jesus. And actually, I've been thinking about that title now since I've seen the book almost a month and a half ago. I have in the back of my mind a series of messages that I want to preach sometime to our congregation on what it takes to be like Jesus. Because what will happen, I think part of the process of how God conforms us to be like his son in our character is he puts us in the kind of situations that Jesus was in, so that we, through constant, faithful living, can reduplicate in our character what he was in his.
And, you know, that's something that was missing. I remember a number of years ago, the big craze of what would Jesus do, coming out of the Charles Sheldon yep. books. And yep. I remember I was at a camp.
WWJD, right?
And there was a kid wearing a WWJD shirt in every type of font that you could imagine. But he was treating this little junior high kid in a totally inconsistent way. I mean, he was just beating him silly, and the kid, the little junior higher, finally left crying. So, being a little mean myself, I haven't been delivered from some meanness. I went over and put my arm around the kid, and I said, and I just kind of looked at him, and I said, "Thank you." And he looked at me stunned and said, "Well, what do you mean, thank you?" I just said, "Thank you." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Thank you for showing me how Jesus would have treated him." And, of course, wow. I said, "Why don't you go take that shirt and take it off?" Because I think, you know, it's not what would Jesus do, it's what did Jesus do. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we want to superimpose what mm-hmm. we think Jesus might have done. But the truth that I think you're getting down to is, what did Jesus really do? So you want to be like Jesus. And I think it's far different from what the scriptures teach that he really was like and how he really responded.
And, you know, the Lord, I think, lived his life authentically and transparently, and that record is preserved for us.
Yes.
You know, there's this little verse in Hebrews 5 that has just, it's just gripped me. I'm thinking about Easter. I know it's early, but I'm thinking already, you know, what am I going to say on Good Friday? What am I going to say on Easter Sunday? I'm beginning to pray and ruminate over those. And this passage in Hebrews 5 talks about our high priest, and then it goes on and it talks about how he prayed with loud cries. And it's that little phrase there, with loud cries. Hmm. And then you go over to the Gospels and you look at where that passage is, and it's in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Mm-hmm.
And the grammar in that passage, when you take the three accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in Luke, he falls down to his knees. And then Matthew says he sunk down to his face. It's like you see the Lord staggering at what's before him, and he just goes down, drops to his knees, and then he just sinks right down to his face. And then Luke says that he was falling on the ground. Not just he fell, he was falling on the ground. The idea is that almost like he was convulsing.
Mm.
Not that he was, you know, somehow in emotional out of controlledness, but what he was dealing with and asking the Father to remove this cup from him was so intense to him that, you know, I've always kind of imagined the Lord as kind of this serene, kneeling with his hands folded and this kind of light coming down from heaven, and he's maybe moving his lips, but you really can't hear. That's not the picture of the New Testament.
No.
I mean, he was on his face and just literally falling on the ground and weeping and begging God for his life.
Yeah, last night, the short devotional that I did at church was similar to that, and it was just prior to that in Luke 22, where Jesus is speaking to Peter, and he says, "Satan has desired to have you, to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed
right.
for you." And what really stirred me was a devotional by Spurgeon. Probably some of your listeners read the morning and evening that Spurgeon has written, and so
right.
many
this
deep
is, by the way, that's a great resource.
Yeah, it is, and it comes up on my computer daily for that day. Anyhow, Spurgeon made a couple of insights there that I just worked off of in other ways. But anyhow, Jesus did not pray that Peter would not face temptation or trials. And he did not even tell Peter that he wasn't going to face the temptation or the trials. He said, "I have prayed for you that your faith will be strong." And don't you think that's where our struggle is when we're
yeah.
going through the struggles or the suffering or the issue? It is a question or a test of our faith. And what I was trying to point out and that incurs me so much was that Jesus is praying for me. You know, there a song that used to sing that someone is praying for you. This is true. Jesus prays for us. He is an intercessor that ever is making prayers on our behalf. And so when it is you and me and Kevin and all of us that are, as believers, going through the realities of life, we do have the Lord Jesus Christ. As you just, his prayer in the garden and his prayer for Peter reminds us that he is praying for us.
You know, it's interesting. He comes in the midst of this. It's kind of funny because, not funny in a humorous way, but it's odd that he would stagger. I mean, the wording of that text is his soul was troubled.
Mm-hmm.
He was in deep distress and in agony. These are the strongest possible words available to Mark. And then he uses the strongest form in which he can put them grammatically. And then he was sorrowful, distressed, agonized. The word is really a word that means circled around, encircled by grief, by this soul-wrenching, just devastation, to the point that he's almost overwhelmed by death. And in all of this, he never forgets that there are three men praying with him that he wants to minister to.
And they kept going to sleep.
But he's begging the Father for
yes.
his life. And God is like silent. It's not like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I try to imagine that as a dad. You know, it's like if Robert R.D. were begging me for his life, I would do anything to save him. But God the Father has prepared this cup for his son. His son is literally calling out for his life. And God the Father is silent.
There was a higher purpose. And I think we
miss that. For God so loved the world.
That's right.
That's the purpose.
And, you know, it puts everything for me, what we're talking about with Christ suffering, and then you even go into the physical dynamics of hematidrosis, which he goes in,
sweating
and Luke is the only one. You know, that's a well-documented thing. But what it does for me is kind of puts things in perspective. What was going through Paul's mind when he said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17, "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us far more exceedingly eternal weight of glory." I think what he had in mind was that his suffering compared to the unbelievable suffering of Christ, it's almost incomparable.
It seems like some of the things that Paul said were similar, because he said, I have been hard pressed.
Oh, my.
And,
yeah.
You know, it is the
I'm
you
a
know, rock in a hard place.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, that just reminds us the Lord Jesus has been through everything that we have been through. Our spiritual forefathers, the Apostle Paul and the writers of the New Testament documents and the disciples and other believers, and then historically, we have a long line of our spiritual forefathers that have been through pain and suffering and hardship and heartache, and we all have to learn the same lessons.
You know, it's interesting. There's a text in the New Testament that talks about our sufferings filling up what was left unfilled by the sufferings of Christ. And you go back and you look at those sufferings and you're like, how could there be any suffering left?
Yes.
And it's not so much that Christ didn't suffer enough, it's that there is more suffering to come.
Right.
And that suffering is not going to be Christ. His suffering is done. But what is left to be fulfilled in the suffering side of Christianity is the suffering of believers. And it's through that platform that we demonstrate a Christ-like spirit. What Jesus said in that garden in the midst of all of this, I mean, he comes and he prays to the Father, Abba, Father, and he comes in confidence, I know you can do all things, and he brings his petition, take this cup from me, but then he submits his will. Nevertheless, not my will but thine be done. And then he takes the cup and he drinks it. Metaphorically. I mean, he literally takes the cup that should have been ours. I mean, I should have drunk that cup.
Yes.
And he drunk it so that we could drink his cup that we celebrate at the Lord's table when we observe the Lord's Supper. And I just sit back and you're just overwhelmed by this. You know, when you really stop and think about it, you know, I heard one preacher say, you just want to get on your knees and you just want to say, I am so sorry for this. I'm the reason you're there. I'm the reason you're having to call out to the Father. Well, Kevin, thank you for introducing us to this delightful but yet difficult topic. And as we go through the year 2006, I'm sure there are going to be days where in our journey to be like Jesus, God is going to introduce us into some trial or take us through a valley. And we look forward to meeting you again on the next broadcast of the Word for Life radio program.